The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So when people are involved with a practice like meditation or mindfulness, Buddhist practice, it's often helpful to realize that there are different phases that we go through. And so the practice looks different at different times, or we approach the practice, we practice differently, depending on the kind of phase, circumstances of what's happening. And I'd like to offer three phases that, there's more, there's different ways of dividing this up, but I'd like to offer three phases that might be relevant for some of you and to consider, so that as you track yourself, you can kind of recognize that you're maybe at, this is the phase I'm at, this is what's needed, this is what's appropriate. And to introduce these three phases, I'd like to do it through an analogy that I'm fond of, that I borrowed from my son's kindergarten class. And in his kindergarten class, once a week, they would make little sculptures out of beeswax. And so the beeswax was kept in the class because they use it every week, so it was up on a shelf. And when beeswax hasn't been used for a while, it's hard. And when it's hard and cold, you can't really shape it. You can't do anything with it. The only thing you can do is maybe break it, but you can't really kind of, it's not flexible and soft enough to shape. So the kids would go to the shelf and pick off the beeswax, and then they were instructed to hold it in their hand, between their two hands, so their body heat would warm it up. But it takes a while, so while it was warming up, the teacher would tell a story. And then by the time the story was finished, their body heat had softened the wax, so now they can shape it. So the first phase was just holding it and allowing it just to feel the warmth and allowing it to melt or to soften. The second phase was then, once it was softened, they would shape it into something beautiful, into something. Usually they made little animals, but they would shape it into something. And they would spend sometimes a lot of time kind of crafting it and looking and working and redoing and, you know, and adjusting and, you know, doing whatever needed to be done to get their idea what was the animal they wanted, the shape they wanted. And that was part of the fun for the kids, the making, the doing, the shaping. To be involved in that was, you know, that was a part of their play. And then the third phase was to put the little thing that they'd built and put it up back up on the shelf for display to kind of just celebrate, to just appreciate it, and just let it be and just free it in a sense from yourself and no longer need to do anything with it. And so it's liberated from you and you put it up and let it be by itself for the next week. So sometimes in our practice, we're at this first phase where what's most useful to do, not necessarily first, but one phase where it's most useful just to be present in a warm-hearted way, or be present in a non-reactive way, not trying to do anything. Because sometimes we try to do something about ourselves and fix something we see is happening too quickly, maybe we're too brittle and we'll break, like the cold beeswax will break. And what's really needed is just to be accompany ourselves, be present with ourselves, hold ourselves in the warmth of our hands or the warmth of our hearts, so to have some compassion and kindness and forgiveness and acceptance and kind of just be present and not be alarmed by anything and not be opposed to anything, not be for anything, just to hold it, just to be with it. And that's done in a variety of ways. And most simply, mindfulness is done with awareness. Just simply hold something in awareness, without needing it to be different than what it is. Just this is the time for it to be held, whatever it is. And sometimes that can take a long time, or certain things take a long time. If you go on retreat sometimes, you might have to be present for a certain sorrow or a certain grief or a certain anger for a long time before anything begins to happen. And it can feel so uncomfortable, it feels like I have to do something about this. But what's really the main thing you have to realize is that, no, for a long time, nothing's needed to be done except to accompany it, to be with it, to be patient with it and hold it. And then something begins to thaw, something begins to relax to doing that. Sometimes a busy mind. You sit down, your mind is fully agitated and spinning around, and it feels like this is not meditation. I need to do something. I need to try harder or focus harder or, you know, bear down or something. And maybe what's needed is just to kind of hold the agitated mind, to be present. And then this is what an agitated mind is like, and hold that in your kind awareness for a while. Just, it doesn't have to be different. You can be agitated, make space for it, and then see what happens. At some point, the second phase comes along, and that's a phase where it's possible to actually shape something. And one of the traditional Buddhist languages is to train the mind. The Buddha was described as a person who can train people who are trainable. The trainer of the trainable. And so occasionally we're trainable. Occasionally there's a situation, the circumstances are that we can train our minds or shape our minds or develop our minds. One of the common words is cultivate. I love the word cultivate because it's a little bit, then we're not completely responsible. We're more like growing, cultivating a plant. We create the conditions for it to grow. But we can shape the mind. And as the Buddha said, whatever you think regularly and frequently becomes a habit of mind, becomes the character. And so you have to be careful with what you do and what you say and what you think and kind of what feelings, what moods you pursue, what feelings and moods you get entangled with and involved and support and continue, because you're shaping your mind. One way or the other, your mind's being shaped. Either it's being shaped or you're shaping it. And if you're not taking any role at all in shaping your mind, there's many people in our society who have paid a lot of money to be involved in shaping your mind. Advertisers, politicians, all kinds of people are constantly bombarding us, trying to kind of change you so you can become a more, you know, better consumer, better buyer or something. And so the mind is a malleable piece of beeswax that can be shaped, once it's warm enough, can be shaped. And so we have to take some responsibility for that shaping, otherwise other people will do it for us. And so to be careful with what you're actually doing in your mind, what you're thinking, what you're engaged in, what you're involved in. And so not to just keep thinking thoughts which are self-defeating, which are undermining you. Thoughts of anger or hostility towards yourself or to others generally are not very helpful. It shapes a certain thing. It doesn't mean that you have to kind of, it doesn't mean you're supposed to repress it or deny it's happening, but it's the involvement with it. It's the kind of getting engaged and perpetuating it. It's one thing for a thought of anger or aversion to arise, and that's fine. But then to say, oh, now let's get into it really well. Let's like get in there and justify it and do it even better. And while I'm at it, you know, I might as well have a hostility towards everyone else. So this way of getting involved is very different than just allowing things to bubble up and then just let them be and then pass away. So to shape the mind, to be involved in choosing what it thinks about a little bit and what direction it goes. And the most classic thing in Buddhism is to help it be shaped by loving kindness. So to make that a regular part of your life is to reflect, you know, what's the kind thing or the friendly thing or the loving thing to do in this situation for myself, for others. And not that you have to be loving, but the fact that you would bring this up as a reflection and consider what would be the loving thing begins to change the inner shape, the inner training, the inner kind of habits of the mind. So it might be just the fact that you thought about it and say, well, I'm not going to be kind now. If I was kind, this is what I would do, but no way. No way, but I'm at least going to reflect on it. Then it could be later in the day, or because you do it regularly, your mind is predisposed to reflect from that perspective. And it might come in handy in a situation where maybe it's really needed, and you're really kind of then more inclined So the mind is shaped or supported to think and reflect in that way. To train the mind, to shape the mind to be generous, to shape the mind to be mindful, to be more attentive, to shape the mind to be patient, to shape it to mind to be, have more joy, to kind of look at the joy, support the joy, enter into situations where you're in your life, where maybe you're more predisposed to notice what is nice about it, what's wonderful, what's to celebrate, what's to feel joy about it, rather than going into situations and be training your mind to be better at looking at all the problems that exist in the situation. Because you'll always find problems. There's no problem in finding problems. But if you're predisposing your mind to think that way, then it's kind of like you're beginning to put blinders on. And if you do it a lot, you become the cold beeswax, meaning that the mind kind of gets locked in that way. And it takes a while to put the warm hands on that tendency and let it soften and open up. So to be a little bit mindful about how you're shaping the mind, how you're developing the mind to get concentrated, developing the mind to be, you know, to let go. All these things can be developed. But if you try to shape the mind too soon, too quickly, before you've allowed yourself just to be with what is there, accompany what's there, then it sometimes can backfire. So really it's helpful to have a foundation first of the ability to just be present for what is. Don't be in a hurry to change anything. Learn how to bring a warm hand or a warm mindfulness awareness to what is there and take your time with it. Maybe it needs 5 minutes, maybe it needs 2 days, just to be accompanied and be present. And then at some point it feels like, oh, now it's time. My mind, now I have the ability to kind of maybe now train the mind, shape the mind, direct the mind in a way that's beneficial, that lets it grow and cultivate and develop in ways that are healthy for me in the future. And then at some point, the mind has been shaped, maybe temporarily, where there is more generosity or compassion or joy or sense of freedom that's there. And then it's to, you know, I don't know what the metaphorical, what the shelf is exactly, but you want to appreciate it. And so one phase of practice is a phase of appreciation. Oh, this is good. Even if it's just a little bit of ease or a little bit of joy or a little bit of patience or a little bit of wisdom that comes from going through a difficult time, to actually take time to appreciate that, to enjoy it, to value it, to admire it, whatever. Just not egotistically, you don't want to overdo it. But it's important to give time to of appreciation because that strengthens it and reinforces it's part of the training of the mind. And so next time when the beeswax is cold and hard, not very good, nice looking, then you're happier and more contented and more trust and confidence that it's valuable just to come and meet it and hold it and accompany it. It's a good path to be on. It's a good thing to do just to be present and be with it. So sometimes we just be with the experience. Sometimes we're involved in shaping and cultivating the mind. And sometimes we're involved in appreciating what's here. Three phases. So maybe at different times, one of those will be more relevant for you and you can give it a little bit more emphasis. So thank you. Mm-hmm.